Live, on air, online, and on the Highland Radio app. This is Highland Radio News.
Good evening, this is the Highland Radio News at 5 o'clock. I'm Daniel Brennan. The headlines. The Taoiseach has insisted updates to NPHET's modelling wouldn't have changed the decision to delay the reopening of indoor dining. The vaccination portal for 30 to 34-year-olds will open towards the end of next week. It's also been confirmed 18 to 49-year-olds will have a choice of vaccine. Approved COVID vaccines in the EU are ineffective against the Delta variant, according to Europe's health regulator. And the PRO of the Jamaica Action Group says a public inquiry into the Jamaica scandal will be important, but the immediate priority is to ensure 100% redress. And first, our main story. The Taoiseach has insisted updates to NPHET's modelling wouldn't have changed the decision to delay the reopening of indoor dining. Cabinet made the call without having the impact of changes to the vaccination programme factored in. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly said the advice only arrived on Monday, which was too late to change the modelling on the spread of the virus. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has insisted, though, it wouldn't have changed their decision.
But I think the idea of trying to connect and say, well, if it was in, it would lead to a different decision now, that's not on. That is not the case whatsoever. Okay? No, you've got to be very clear on this. In no shape or form would it have changed the decision to pause. That's the key point.
The vaccination portal for 30 to 34-year-olds will open towards the end of next week. The HSE has also confirmed 18 to 49-year-olds will receive a choice of their vaccine. The official advice is those age groups should be offered an mRNA option, but they can opt to have AstraZeneca or Johnson & Johnson if they want an earlier vaccination date. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly has said the impact of new NIAC recommendations on the vaccine rollout are not fully known. He's added it's not clear yet what the impact of the Delta variant will be on hospitalisations.
There is a question which the entire scientific community are watching the UK for, which is, how does that translate into hospitalizations and how does it translate into death? So with the NIAC advice, with more information coming in from the UK, as we learn more, the models are regularly updated. And that will, of course, be the case with the NIAC advice as well.
The HSE has confirmed that 18 to 49-year-olds will have a choice of what vaccine they get. NIAC is advising that under 50s are still offered an mRNA vaccine by the HSE. However, if they want an earlier vaccination, they can opt to get an AstraZeneca or Johnson & Johnson jab. The registration portal will open for 30 to 34-year-olds towards the end of next week. HSE CEO Paul Reid says he's presented a plan to government on how the latest NIAC advice would be embraced.
We put forward to the Minister just an hour before this media briefing, recommendations about how we would go about it, but in essence those details are with the Minister. But in essence we'll be utilising all channels available to us, vaccination centres, pharmacies, and continuing down through the age cohorts as we have been doing as well.
Approved COVID vaccines in the EU are effective against the Delta variant, according to Europe's health regulator. The EMA, however, says it's not in a position to recommend the use of different vaccines for the second dose to help speed up the rollout. It says more data is expected and it will be reviewed when available. Dr. Marco Cavallari from the European Medicines Agency says vaccines being developed across Europe are effective against variants.
Right now, it seems that the four vaccines that are approved in the European Union are protective against all strains that are circulating in Europe, including the Delta variant. Emerging data from real-world evidence are showing that two doses of vaccines are protective against the Delta variant.
The PRO of the Jamaica Action Group says a public inquiry into the Jamaica scandal will be important, but the immediate priority is to ensure 100% redress. Michael Doherty was speaking to Highland Radio in the wake of yesterday's inaugural meeting of the working group established by Minister Dara O'Brien following last month's massive demonstration in Dublin. Mr. Doherty says he and the other homeowner representatives will be pushing to ensure that the group has reported by the end of this month and that its recommendations are acted upon. On the question of an inquiry, he says that while it cannot detract from the drive to have homes repaired, it must happen.
If you're a Donegal homeowner or a Mayo homeowner, your first thing is, how do I secure my home? How do I secure my family's safety? And, you know, that's not through a public inquiry right now. That's about getting the scheme over the line, getting our homes restored to where they need to be. But in parallel to that, or maybe just slightly after that, if it detracts away from the ability to get homes fixed, it needs to be after that. But a public inquiry does need to happen. We need to make sure, because we're still taxpayers here as well as victims, and we're entitled to know that the lessons are learned from this and that there's a system put in place that ensures this never happens again. There are serious questions still out there, Donald, even with what's been manufactured today. No one, hand on heart, will answer the question and say that they can stand over blocks that are produced today, that they are mica-free, pyrite-free, or anything else. There's a reluctance to nail their colours to the flag on this one. And that's something that's deeply, deeply concerning. We're in a situation where today we can't even stand over what we've got. And I'm still waiting to hear who's going to put their hand up and say, yes, I can stand over that. No one's doing that to my knowledge. And we know we've got engineers on our scheme deeply concerned about some of the things that's going on here as well regarding the appropriateness of remediation schemes that involve repairs as opposed to complete demolishes. There is science around this stuff that is now evolving on the back of the fact that we've got more homes through the scheme than we had first time round, and the number of homes has been tested. That needs to be looked at and seriously looked at. But right now, the priority is making sure that we get our homes fixed and fixed properly.
The plan is initially to give the stadium a complete revamp. You know, it's been closed for almost 2 years now, so the outside, the track, a lot of the paintwork.
Yesterday in the Dáil, I challenged the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, about the fact that this payment scheme was being cut from today, July 1st. Now that your listeners know what I'm speaking about, this is a payment that allowed nursing homes to ensure continued rigorous infection control measures. Hugely important. We know how many residents of nursing homes didn't see families for months on end, how many families were heartbroken. And because the situation has improved somewhat, nursing home visits have resumed, and it's crucial that they continue. And this fund is needed for now to make sure that the infection control measures remain in place and that nursing homes are safe places.
And this is particularly relevant to Donegal now at the moment.
Look, what's happening now with the announcement by the HSC that they're cutting back on visiting to nursing homes in Donegal, it's heartbreaking. Those people in nursing homes have to be protected. And to think that today we are being told that the visiting times for families are being restricted, are being cut back in nursing homes, at the very same instant as the government is withdrawing funding to protect residents and to ensure good infection control, is just unacceptable. And the government has to change their mind on this.
That was South Donegal Deputy Marion Harkin, who said it was unacceptable that funding was being withdrawn from nursing homes in order to provide for rigorous infection control measures. This is after the HSC announced yesterday that visiting is being curtailed at a number of community nursing units in North East Donegal and Inishowen that have high rates of COVID-19 infection, which also have lower than normal vaccine uptake rates. Gardaí are warning agribusinesses to be vigilant after a number of fraudulent transactions using cloned credit cards occurred. There have been four incidents in Cavan over the last week, with similar thefts also occurring in Donegal, Cavan, Roscommon and Laois. Donald Kavanagh has more.
The scam involves businesses being contacted to place an order of up to 80 rolls of silage wrap to a value of between 6 and 7,000 euro. Payment is made over the phone with a credit card and a courier is arranged to pick up the goods. While the seller received payment, they're said to have been later contacted by the bank to say the card used was cloned and they'd be taking the money back, leaving the business with a loss. On Wednesday last, a second attempt was made to buy rolls of silage wrap from an agribusiness in County Cavan. Garthy were present when the goods were collected and two individuals were arrested. They were taken to Cavan Garthy station and they've been released without charge, with a file going to the DPP. Garthy are appealing to all businesses, and in particular those in the agribusiness sector, to remain vigilant to customers wishing to pay for substantial goods over the phone, particularly if they are not familiar with that person.
There are calls for urgent progress to be made on dredging efforts at Maharoti Pier. Councillor Micheál Colm McGillagh-Aspig says despite a submission for a licence to dredge the pier being submitted by Donegal County Council in January, progress has yet to be made. He says the build-up of sand at the pier is making it almost unusable for the local community.
Every year we've seen Donegal County Council dredging the pier at Maharoti, but unfortunately this year the cabinet or the license that the Donegal County Council has applied for has taken far too long. At the beginning of the year in January, it was submitted, but yet here we are, more or less in July, and still the boats are lying dry, or some of the boats. We have two ferry services now that cater for both Torry, Agus Inish Bofin, who leave Maharorty Pier, plus the fishing community and others who use that pier. And unfortunately, a good bit of that pier now has not been dredged, and it leaves boats lying dry. And this is not good. If we're talking about supporting the fishing community and the coastal community itself, we need to see this works carried out. And it's absolutely madness that the state and the Dublin government hasn't allowed us to carry on. We were told a couple of years ago that we would get a seawall. Still, we're waiting for any news in relation to that there. So I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Thomas Pringle, who is putting in a PQ for me in relation to this, to try to force the minister to take action, because the Maharorty community deserves far better than this.
Geoffrey Donaldson has described the Northern Ireland Protocol as the greatest threat to the economic integrity of the UK in any of their lifetimes. He's become the DUP's third party leader in 2 months. Mr. Donaldson says the removal of the Irish Sea border is the only path to stable and sustainable government in the North.
This is the route to restoring the constitutional balance that was achieved by the Belfast and St Andrews Agreement. A very delicate balance. And it is the only path to stable and sustainable government in Northern Ireland.
Significant funding is needed to bring mental health facilities across the country up to an acceptable standard to treat patients. The Mental Health Commission says regulatory compliance at approved centres did improve last year, but many mentally ill people are still being cared for in old and run-down facilities. It says the pandemic further restricted access to services, as many inpatient centres were forced to reduce admissions. Mental Health Reform CEO Fiona Coyle says this is leading to longer waiting times.
What we're hearing more and more is that more people are coming out looking for support, and unfortunately, in terms of the state services, the waiting lists are long and they're getting longer. The demand is increasing. So, you know, we do know that we do need urgent investment, because it's so important to get people the support that they need at the right time to ensure their distress might not escalate.
It's coming up on 13 minutes past five. We'll go to a quick break. Sport with Oisín is next.
Sport on Highland, brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure, Letterkenny. Check out the new Donegal Portland leisurewear range online and in store at michaelmurphysports.ie.
And now it's time for sport. We'll throw it over to Oisín Kelly.
Thanks, Daniel. We're going to start with soccer. Derry City have re-signed Junior on loan from Dundalk. The striker was top scorer in the SSE Airchesty Premier Division in 2019 during a previous spell at the Brandywell. Meanwhile, Will Patching's loan spell at Derry has come to an end, and he has went the opposite direction and returned to Oriel Park with Dundalk. Cross Channel, Manchester United have confirmed they reached an agreement to sign Jadon Sancho from Borussia Dortmund. The German club had earlier said the England winger was on the verge of a move worth €85 million. The transfer is subject to contractual terms and a medical, which will be completed after Euro 2020. Seamus Coleman says it's time for Everton to pull together under new manager Rafa Benitez. The former Liverpool boss has been appointed on a three-year deal, and the move hasn't gone down well with some Toffee supporters. Club skipper Coleman says it's time to move forward.
I've been around the club long enough to know when I'm aware of supporters who know of the manager's history, but I think now as a group of players, as a group of supporters, staff members, I think ultimately we want what's best for Everton, and to get what's best for Everton, we all need to come together now and look forward to the new season. And
Bohemians and the FAI have confirmed 6,000 supporters can attend the club match against Stjarnan at the Aviva Stadium. The second leg of the Europa League Conference, or the Europa Conference League rather, will serve as part of the government's pilot programme for a safe return of spectators to Irish sport. The first leg is in Iceland on July 8th, with the Dublin leg set to be held 7 days later on July 15th. There's a couple of changes to Harp fixtures as well. Harps are due to play Waterford on Friday the 9th of July. Kickoff time has been changed and will now start at 5:45. While Dundalk against Van Harps, originally scheduled for Sunday the 18th of July, will now kick off on Saturday the 17th of July at 4 p.m. Lucas Herbert remains the man to catch on the opening day of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open at Mount Juliet. Rory McIlroy is on the course in day one with the latest. Dennis Kerwin.
Rory McIlroy was the star of the afternoon starters, but he struggled early on, making the turn at 2 over par. He got those shots back with birdies on 10 and 13 to bring him back to level par, and he has 3 holes of his opening round still to play. Rory is 8 shots behind the leader, Australia's Lucas Herbert. He had 9 birdies and a single drop shot in a superb 8 under par opening round of 64. Herbert has a 2-shot lead over Scotland's Grant Forrest, and there's a large group of 9 players poised on 5 under par. Shane Lowry had 4 birdies and 2 bogeys in a solid, if unspectacular, opening round of 70. Niall Carney and Colm Moriarty are the only other Irish players in red figures. They're still out on the course. Reporting on the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, I'm Dennis Kerwin.
Looking ahead to tonight on Highland, the Score programme will be aired just after the 7 o'clock news. I'll be joined on the show by Lorraine Mullarkey from Monaghan, one of the leading female competitors who this week has taken on the mammoth challenge of the Donegal Ultra 555.
Well, the thing that I'm looking forward to in comparison to the training that I've done recently is I only have to do each one of them once. Once I'm over each climb, then that's it done. And I think that's part of my mental game, is just like taking each section as it comes and just getting over it. So what am I most looking forward to? I'm most looking forward to rolling up onto that ramp when I'm finished.
What sort of time are you hoping to do it in?
I want to obviously do sub 24, but I haven't really, I'm thinking definitely sub 22 would be good. But time-wise, a lot of it will come down to what we get in the day weather-wise.
That's Lorraine Mullarkey, set to take on the 555 tomorrow morning. There's more from Lorraine on the Score tonight, just after the 7 news. We'll also be hearing from Donegal under 20 manager Gary Duffy ahead of their opener in the Championship against Armagh on Friday. And former Harps captain Declan Boyd joins us to run his eye over the League of Ireland Premier Division clashes for Finn Harps and Derry City this coming weekend. Basketball, Ireland under 18 women's head coach Tony O'Mahony has named his 12-person final squad for the IFBA European Challengers, which is taking place in the Czech Republic in late July, and it includes 2 players from the Letterkenny Blaze Club. Maria Keely is one of 4 uncapped players and is in line for international debut. Keely is also joined by fellow Blaze member Sharon Cunningham. Ireland will play in Group B of the competition alongside Lithuania, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Turkey and Serbia. In rugby, Joey Carberry will play his first Ireland test since 2019 on Saturday. He's been named at out half for the game with Japan at the Aviva Stadium. Munster back row Gavin Combs will make his debut off the bench. There's 2 Irish players in the Lions matchday squad for the game against the Emirate Lions in Johannesburg on Saturday. Ian Henderson and Bundy Aki are on the bench. Coach Warren Gatland has made 14 changes from the side which started against Japan. Josh Adams is the only player to retain his spot. Scotland's Stuart Hogg will captain the side. Coco Gauff is through to the third round at Wimbledon. The 17-year-old beat Elena Vesnaya 6-4, 6-3. Earlier, the top seed, Ashley Barty, won in straight sets over Anna Blinkova. But third seed, Elena Svitolina, has been beaten and is out of the competition. She lost to Poland's Magda Linet. On centre court next is 8-time champion Roger Federer as he plays Richard Gasquet. And there has been ones already today as well for Daniel Medvedev and Alexander Zverev. And in cycling, having gone 5 years without a Tour de France victory, Mark Cavendish won a second stage in 3 days this afternoon. The Manx rider won the sprint into Châteauroux. Matthew van der Poel retained the leader's yellow jersey. That's your sport, Daniel.
Thanks, Oisin. And now it's over to Chris Ashmore with this week's Farming News.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's edition of Farming News and Views here on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. The Common Agricultural Policy is designed to protect family farm incomes, support the rural economy, ensure the production of high-quality, safe food for consumers, as well as protecting rural landscapes and the environment. Well, following years of negotiations, a new CAP deal was struck in Brussels last week, and it has the potential to distribute more money among farmers over the coming years than its predecessor. But this CAP will not fit all farmers. Barry Cassidy is news correspondent with the Irish Farmers Journal and has been writing extensively about the subject. I spoke to him earlier and began by asking him about the historical context of the Common Agricultural Policy and just how important it is.
Yes, so the Common Agricultural Policy, I suppose it was a cornerstone really of the European project and being its first major across all the countries in the European Union. and supporting them. But you're talking from 1960 right up to the present day. And CAP has maintained its position as probably one of the most important policies for Europe in terms of securing a stable food supply and also bonding, I suppose, that sort of sense of togetherness. However, what we've seen, in recent years, particularly in the last 5 years and maybe into the next policy, is a growing environmental and climate ambition within the Common Agricultural Policy too. And that's something that Irish farmers will obviously be subject to now as we move into 2023, which is the new policy, and maybe more away from the food production side of things that it has been focusing on and bringing in that second pillar, really, of climate and environmental action.
Now, to bring us right up to date, a new deal has been struck in Brussels. There's been considerable reaction. So let's just look at the main points, and you've been writing extensively about it this week. So for farmers in Donegal, what's coming for them?
Yeah, I suppose the most significant thing agreed at the end of last week in Brussels was a €300 million eco-scheme fund. And this is essentially see every farmer take a linear cut of 25% of their payment in order to create an overall eco-scheme fund for Ireland in order to fund farmers to undertake climate and environmental action. And I suppose that's a very significant change. It's a significant move of money away from what has been traditionally an income support payment to now be income support plus climate and environment as well. So that's obviously going to be a significant change. And what we don't, I suppose, really know yet is how farmers will draw down out of that fund. Every farmer now knows they face that 25% cut, but they don't know exactly how they're going to get their hands on that money on the other side. So that, I suppose, that's something we're waiting to see now over the next weeks and months. Also, I suppose, another theme of this CAP, along with the climate and environmental action, has been greater payment redistribution. And I suppose that's moving money between farmers. Ireland secured more or less the same CAP budget this time around as it did the last time. However, this time we're going to see more money moving between farmers through a variety of mechanisms. And I suppose convergence would be the most familiar or recognisable one of those.
So again, just to point out that, you know, previously, whilst we have an average figure being paid to farmers throughout the country, the amount that individual farmers receive can vary hugely.
Yes, so Ireland is one of the European countries that operates a payment entitlement system. Now, some European countries have gone to a flat rate payment per hectare that sees every farmer receive the same payment per hectare, regardless of what they're doing. Ireland, on the other hand, has a historical-based payment method, and this sees farmers paid anywhere from 160 up to €700 per hectare, with our national average falling at €265 per hectare. I suppose convergence has been introduced the last time around in order to pull all payments closer towards the national average. And that's going to continue in the next CAP. What we've seen so far is we've reached 60%, and the minimum rate that's now been set in the CAP deal is 85%. So that will see farmers on below average payments receive increases funded by cuts to farmers with above average payments.
Now, if I can just pick up some of the points that have emerged, there is this definition of active farmers. Payments should target active farmers. So what is an active farmer?
Yes, so I suppose what's been set in this CAP deal this week has been that there needs to be a definition of an active farmer introduced. However, in recognition that I suppose that farming is significantly different across every EU country, that's going to be left up to member states to make that decision. So that's something Ireland will have to do over the next 6 months, is sit down with farm organisations and with farmers and I suppose consider how exactly do we legally define an active farmer. Now, I suppose one thing that's very important within that is the CAP deal is very clear in stating that part-time farmers have to be protected within any definition, that they cannot be left out from CAP support. And I suppose that's in recognition of the very important role that they play within that. I suppose something that our own Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlow, has said is that the leasing of entitlements needs to be looked at. And I suppose there has been some criticism levelled in that area that we have now what are known as armchair farmers, or farmers who maybe 20 years ago were actively farming, but are now leasing out their land and leasing out their payments, but still receiving a substantial amount of money for that, despite the fact they're no longer actively farming.
Here in Donegal, we have a very high percentage of farmers over the age of 60 or 65, higher than the national average. And there is a determination out there to divert some of the budget towards younger farmers. So what can they expect?
Yes, so I suppose supporting young farmers has been a priority for the CAP budget for maybe a growing in priority really in the last 10 years or so, and that's going to continue into the next one. I suppose last time around we've seen a minimum of 2%, a maximum of 2% allocated to young farmers, about €25 million annually. That's now going to be 3% of the entire CAP budget, so there's going to be a larger budget there to support young farmers, and that can be used to do things like paying top-up payments to young farmers, you know, maybe offering money towards getting up shared partnerships, get them set up, maybe offering higher grant rates to young farmers to make investments. I suppose one thing that was maybe always talked about and maybe missed since it's gone has been the farm retirement scheme. Now, that is possible under the legislation, but it's certainly not something that's been touted in any big way as an Irish level. So I suppose what you're probably going to see that young farmer money is focused on supporting young farmers to enter the industry rather than supporting older farmers to exit it.
Now, the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnell-Logue, has spoken about a farmer-friendly CAP deal. Now, he's a little bit of selling to do because not everybody is happy. The problem is, of course, that one size doesn't fit all, so there has been fairly mixed reaction.
Yes, yeah, so I suppose when we think of Irish agriculture, you know, there's 123,000 people receiving a CAP payment, and each one of those is broadly different. And to each one, this CAP deal will mean something different. So if you're below average payment, I suppose you'd be keenly waiting to see more convergence. However, on the other side of that coin, if you're above average, you know, you're hoping for less convergence. And I suppose our farm organisations have reflected that split. I mean, if we look at the likes of maybe the IFA has come out and said this is a bad deal for farmers and that it doesn't support productive beef, sheep and tillage farmers, and that the government should now step in through things like the climate tax or the carbon tax and the national co-financing to make that support. And then maybe on the other side of the coin, you have the INHFA saying that it's time for the minister to bite the bullet and get convergence done, you know, get some full flattening and see every farmer paid the same rate. They say it no longer makes sense to be paying farmers based on what they were doing 20 years ago. And then there is other reaction then maybe from tillage farmers who feel they've been unfairly targeted in this deal. And then, you know, some other farm organisations say that because CAP is no longer just about food production, it's now about environmental action as well. We're trying to pull the same budget in different directions, and that ultimately will leave nobody happy.
So, in conclusion, the deal has been struck. When will it come into effect, and just how much tinkering can the Irish government do before it affects farmers here?
Yes, so we now have 6 months until Ireland has to submit its strategic plan to the European Union on the 31st of December 2021. And there will be a lot of things in that deal that Ireland can make decisions for on themselves, whether they want to go beyond the minimum convergence rate, you know, whether they want to introduce front-loaded payments, you know, the types of schemes they may introduce to support specific sectors. All that is at the discretion of Ireland to make that decision. Once that's submitted to the European Union, they'll take around six, seven months to assess it and assess every plan from across Europe, give their approval or maybe some feedback. And then come the 1st of January 2023, the new CAP will begin and it will remain in place then until 2027.
And that was Barry Cassidy, news correspondent with the Irish Farmers Journal. Just time for one other bit of farming news. Chagas has 40 Walsh scholarship opportunities for recent and experienced graduates who wish to pursue postgraduate study on topical agri-food issues. The scholarships include a tax-free bursary of €24,000 per annum, which includes university fees up to a maximum of €6,000 per annum. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Farming News and Views. As always, many thanks for listening. Until next week, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
Thanks, Chris. And now on to the weather. Warm and dry in most areas today with some hazy sunshine, with highs of 19 to 22 degrees. Dry overnight with light breezes allowing patches of mist and fog to develop. It'll be mild with a lowest temperature of 8 to 11 degrees. And the headlines again this evening. The Taoiseach has insisted an update to NPHET's modelling wouldn't have changed the decision to delay the reopening of indoor dining. The vaccination portal for 30 to 34-year-olds will open towards the end of next week. The HSE has also confirmed that 18 to 49-year-olds will have a choice of vaccine. Approved COVID vaccines in the EU are effective against the Delta variant, according to Europe's health regulator. And Geoffrey Donaldson has described the Northern Ireland Protocol as the greatest threat to the economic integrity of the UK. That's all for now. We'll have headlines for you again at 6 o'clock. Until then, good evening. The obituary notices for Thursday evening, July the 1st. The death has occurred of Liam McNulty, Town Parks, Riffo. In accordance with HSE and government guidelines, the wake, funeral and burial are restricted with a maximum of 50 people permitted. Liam's remains will be reposing at his late residence, Town Parks, Riffo, from 8pm this evening. Funeral from his late residence on Saturday morning at 10:30am, going to St Union's Church, Riffo, for 11 o'clock Requiem Mass with burial afterwards in the adjoining cemetery. The funeral mass can be viewed live at www.parishoverfo.com. Family flowers only, please. Donations in lieu if desired to the staff of St Union's Nursing Home, Remelton Road, Letterkenny, care of any family member or Kelly's funeral directors, Oakfield, Riffo. The death has taken place of James Edward Boyle, Molnamina, Glendees. His remains will repose at Shovlin's Funeral Home, Sandfield, Ardra, from 6pm to 8pm this evening. Removal tomorrow, Friday, going to St Connell Church, Glendees, for Requiem Mass at 12 noon, with burial afterwards in the local cemetery. The funeral mass can be viewed live on churchservices.tv/Glendees. Due to HSE and government guidelines, the wake, funeral and interment are private to family and close friends only, with a maximum of 50 people permitted. The death has taken place of Mrs. Jean Wilson, Maharahan, Riffo. Her remains are reposing at her residence. Funeral from there tomorrow afternoon for service in Riffo Presbyterian Church at 2pm, with interment afterwards in the family plot in the adjoining churchyard. The service can be viewed live on Craig's Media Facebook page. Due to HSE and government guidelines, the wake, funeral and interment are private to family only, with a maximum of 50 people permitted. Family flowers only, donations if desired to St Joseph Hospital, Stranorler, care of any family member or Gibson's funeral directors. The death has occurred of Mabel Porter, Nee Robinson, Dromenan Farm, St Johnson, Lifford. In accordance with HSE and government guidelines, the wake, funeral and burial are strictly private to family only, with a maximum of 50 people permitted. Mabel's remains will be reposing at her late residence, Dromenan Farm, from 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Funeral from her late residence on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, going to Chapel of Ease of St. Columba, Church of Ireland, Craigadoos, for 10:30am service, with burial afterwards in Holy Trinity Church, Dunfanaghy, in the family plot. The death has taken place in her 105th year of Beatty John Ufari O'Doherty, Cronagiga, Crothley. Her remains are reposing at her residence for family only. Funeral mass will take place on Saturday morning at 11am in St Patrick's Church, Meany Vale, followed by burial in Maharagallan Cemetery. Due to government restrictions and HSE guidelines, the wake will be strictly private to family only. In compliance with current HSE guidelines, Beatty's funeral will be limited to 50 people. Funeral mass will be broadcast on the Colm Gillespie Funeral Director Facebook page on Saturday morning at 11am. And the death has taken place of David Deveney, Grocky, Manor Cunningham. His remains are reposing at his late residence. Funeral from there tomorrow afternoon at 1:30pm, going to Ray Presbyterian Church, Manor Cunningham, for funeral service at 2pm. Interment afterwards in the adjoining cemetery. Family flowers only, please. Donations in lieu of flowers, if desired, to MS Ireland, care of any family member. In compliance with government and HSE guidelines, the wake, funeral and interment are private to family and close friends only, please.